Hello and welcome to the River's Edge Church podcast. Today, Pastor Dave Johnson will bring a message of hope through our series in 1 Corinthians, Christ, Culture, Church. We're excited to share another episode with you today. And now, here's Pastor Dave.
Hello, welcome back to River's Edge. We have been having conversations, just extra conversations, on what we've been teaching on Sunday mornings. So this one is on the resurrected body, and what does that all mean? So I got a question in my email that on the resurrected body. It says, I'm slowly building my theology of heaven and resurrection. Now, specifically, the resurrected body. When we were in chapter 5, something in our discussion made me wonder if Paul's call for us to honor God with our bodies has eternal significance as well. Good catch there. Okay. When we steward our bodies well, spiritually and physically, is that preparation for heaven? Plainly, is this the body that will be resurrected? I'm struck by the resurrected Jesus. How he was visible and tangible. He spoke and he ate. He still has scars on his body. What does this mean for us? Is that another reason why none of his bones were broken, as prophesied also? Ooh, I don't think I prepared for that answer. Okay. When we discuss the transfiguration in Mark, this is actually like compiling a number of series that we've taught together. When we discuss the transfiguration in Mark, we talked about how Moses and Elijah were distinguishable even by name. Moses died, buried by God himself. That he was he's one of those, we don't know where his body is. He was hidden away on Mount Nebo. And Elijah was taken up. And yet both show up and were very visible to the three. And I'm assuming that they were physically tangible because Peter thought that they might need some sleep, rents, hesitance, hence the offer of tents. Would you say that Moses and Elijah were in resurrected form? Okay, so I do want to say, let's just start this off and kind of, I read all the questions together because I kind of want to start off by saying, yeah, I do. I do think that Moses and Elijah were in resurrected form. I think Jesus' resurrection shows us a lot. If you're a reader of N.T. Wright, then you could read his book, Surprised by Hope. And one of the things that he talks about is how in our American 21st century world that we live in kind of works against us when we think about heaven and resurrection. And that is, our general thought is that your disembodied soul goes to a disembodied place called heaven after you die, and that that's where your soul gets rest. But the reality is that that's not true. That's not what the Bible teaches, at least. What the Bible teaches is that after you die, just like Jesus said to the thief on the cross, today you'll be with me in paradise, just like Jesus said to them, after we die, we do have this eternal rest. And the book of Hebrews is very careful to call it rest, almost like a Sabbath. And I think that links very heavily with Genesis chapter 2, verse 1, where it talks about the seventh day of creation. Because the seventh day of creation, most readers have noted, has no ending like the other days. The first 6 days, there was a beginning and an end, but the seventh day has no ending, and it's kind of known as this eternal day. And that's what God wants us to get out of that, is that it was an eternal day. And so, let's go with that. Jesus' resurrection, his death and resurrection, is the prototype. He calls himself the prototype in a number of different ways. So, essentially, what's going to happen to our bodies is that we will die. All of us will die. Our bodies will not, they're not made to last forever. They were, but we forfeited that in the garden, right, when sin and death entered the world. And essentially, after we die, I think Jesus is offered to the thief on the cross, today you will be with me in paradise. Jesus said where he was going that day, paradise. Eternal rest, as the author of Hebrews calls it. Heaven, as we would call it in the 21st century American mindset. And then 3 days later, Jesus raises from the dead. So heaven is actually a temporary reality until earth is reinvaded with your resurrected body. That's the point of Scripture. That's what the New Testament teaches. I think our 21st century American vision of heaven sort of works against us on this one. And so I'm just throwing that out there. So I just wanted to take a second and kind of answer some of these questions, but do so in a way that kind of takes us through the Bible from beginning to end. So the first question I have is, what were our bodies like in Eden? What was the human body made to be like? Now, I don't know that we actually have, Eden is not necessarily, it's not a scientific work. I'm sorry, that Genesis 1 and 2 is not a scientific work. It's a work of Hebrew poetry. So it's not like we can sit down and work a scientific deal up on the body. But what we can do is notice a few things. So there's this great thinker named Dallas Willard, and if you ever read The Divine Conspiracy, Renovation of the Heart, The Great Omission, The Spirit of the Disciplines, you'll just know that his work is absolutely phenomenal. And I was at a lecture one time where Dallas Willard said, ask that question, what were our bodies like in Eden? And it was like, huh, I never thought of that. And he made the case that humans glowed. They shone. And so I think everybody kind of scratched their head and was like, you think that humans glowed pre-sin? And his case was, now, when you look at a light bulb and the light bulb is on, how can you tell there's a filament inside? Now, this is assuming you remember those old school light bulbs with filaments in them. Now all we have is LED around everywhere. But, you know, before you hold the light bulb up, you see the filament. And of course, when a light bulb is on, it's too bright. You can't see the filament. And so when it turns off, then you could see it. So his point was, how did you see the filament? Well, you didn't, because it was glowing. It was bright. But then you turn it off and all of a sudden the insides are exposed. And then he asks the question, how did Adam and Eve know that they were naked? You know, maybe they were glowing, and they were glowing because they were in the presence of God, and because they were glowing, there was just no realization that they were naked. And it's like, whoa, okay, that's an interesting thing, because as Moses climbs Mount Sinai, which, by the way, there's this whole other theology I've broken down in sermons before, but it's called the Cosmic Mountain. And the Cosmic Mountain in the Bronze Age idea of when the Bible was written, it's like the mountain where God dwells, is where Eden is. And if you were to read Second Temple literature, like the Book of Enoch, then one of the things you would see is like the mountain of God is all connected with like the Sheol or the place of the dead or what we might call hell. And it's like way below in the dark and shadowy spaces and stuff. And that's not in a biblical text. That's in the Book of Enoch. It's something that your New Testament authors would have been reading. And we know that because they actually reference the Book of Enoch in some places in the New Testament. So I'm going to talk a lot more in a couple podcasts when we talk about judging angels, all about the Book of Enoch, because that's that and Deuteronomy 32 is where we get this idea. So I'll leave that discussion to that podcast. But essentially, the cosmic mountain, Moses goes up to God's mountain where God's presence is. And in Exodus 34, verses 29 through 35, this is what the text says. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the covenant law in his hands, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them. So Aaron and the leaders of the community came back to him and spoke to them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai. When Moses finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed it until he came out. And when he came out, he told the Israelites that he had been commanded, what he had been commanded. They saw his face was radiant. Then Moses would put the veil back on over his face until he went to speak with the Lord. Now, what do we see in this text is that Moses, his old self, essentially, went up to the mountain of God. He goes up to the mountain of God. He his face changes. Like, he's glowing when he comes back down. He has no awareness of this. And it's almost like this old dead body of Moses, this sinful body of Moses, goes up in the perfect in the presence of perfection of God himself. And Moses now glows as a result. Like, I think what the text is doing is showing us, one, what it's like to be in the presence of holiness, of true holiness, is that it's not that we, our sinfulness affects the holiness, is that we change. There's another great text when in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah goes up to the mountain. I'm sorry, he has this vision of the throne room of God, and he says, I'm unclean, I shouldn't be here. And he's right, he should not be there. But God says, you know, no, you're the guy that I'm calling to go spend my message. And so he touches him with a burnt coal. God touches Isaiah with a burnt coal, and God's holiness changes Isaiah. That's the point, is that when we go up to these heavenly realms, when we go to be with God in person, our sinful bodies just can't stand that presence and have to be changed in order to be able to stand the presence of God. And so there is a changing of the body, because what we exist in right now, and you just look, sit down and look at your hands and stuff, this is this post-Eden body. You know, it doesn't matter how healthy you are, if you're a vegan, if you do 1,000 push-ups a day, if you ride your bike 10 million miles a year or whatever, it doesn't matter how good a shape you're in, your body is still this decaying body that is outside of the holiness of God. Now, it is true for the Christian. Like, there's a little bit of, I get the problem with that statement, even that when you have Jesus dwelling with you in your body, you have the Holy Spirit dwelling with you, you kind of get this glimmer, right, of heaven and earth. And that's sort of what Moses got, is this glimmer, so much so that he had to put this veil on over his face. So, you know, I think the Old Testament is just a whole bunch of mental shelves or stairs. And so it's sort of like you put that one on the shelf, and then, like, what are the next things of the New Testament or the Old Testament? And as you start digging through the Old Testament, you start to see things like Ezekiel 37 in the Valley of the Dry Bones. You know, Ezekiel's got this vision, and he sees all these dry bones coming back together again, coming, life being brought back into them, and God breathing into them, and they become this incredible army of God. And it's like, wow, what is that vision all about? Well, it's about the resurrection. It's about the dead coming back to life. You know, and there's visions in Daniel chapter 12 about the dead rising, and they'll rise to be judged, and they'll either rise to be with God because they've done well with their life. In other words, they've honored God with their life, or they will rise to be condemned because they didn't care about God in their life. And then we see Jesus's resurrection in the New Testament. He dies, he's raised again. You still see some of the marks of the old body. And I think guys like N.T. Wright, what they would say is, what we do here lasts until eternity. He makes that case. There's a good parable about that. No, it is a parable. It's a parable. Lazarus and the rich man. Lazarus and the rich man apparently know each other. They die, and this is Jesus telling the parable. You got to remember, you know, and it's probably one of the most horrific parables of all the New Testament, because there's this poor man who sits outside Lazarus's, poor man named Lazarus. He's the only named guy, and he sits outside a rich man's house and just longing to eat the scraps of food that the dogs were eating, and he doesn't get any of it, and he dies. And Abraham says he goes to, Jesus says he goes to Abraham's bosom. Who knows what that means? I mean, in Jewish mentality, it's like you went back to your father, Abraham, essentially. So he's laying there in comfort and stuff. And this rich man, because he doesn't take care of the poor, he doesn't honor God. And part of not honoring God is not honoring others. And so he didn't honor this other guy. So he wasn't honoring the creator, this other person. Just like if you dishonor my kids, and it's like, hey, dude, you're dishonoring me. So essentially, they both die. And the rich man's like, hey, send Lazarus to come bring me some water, just something, you know, or send Lazarus to go warn my family, you know. And the whole conversation that God is having with this rich man, he remembers. He remembers everything that happened on earth. And I think that guys like N.T. Wright and other theologians say that what happens in our life now lasts till eternity. And yeah, Jesus still had the scars. And I think that's important. And you actually see it in the book of Revelation 2 when Jesus is on the throne. Now, it's all different kinds of language. It's essentially, you see a lamb looking as if he had been slain. Well, that lamb is Jesus, and he was slain, but he had come back to life again in the resurrection. And he's now ruling and reigning on the throne of God. And so you got Jesus right there. So, you know, yeah, there are still scars because what happens in this day lasts, but I don't think that they hurt Jesus. I don't think that there's something that, I don't know. I think for Jesus, it's sort of like, hey, this is a picture of what I've done for you. Maybe a little bit more of that. So, you know, let's move on because we get into really technical questions. Like, if I'm missing a hand here on earth, will I still be missing it in heaven? Well, I don't think that you'll think about your body in heaven, to be totally honest with you. I think that you'll be with God, and thinking about your body will be a moot point and it would be silly. So I really wouldn't worry about any of that stuff now. But let's look at a few different verses. Romans 8:23. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we eagerly wait for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. So Paul is saying we are all eagerly awaiting the redemption of our physical bodies. And he goes a lot further in 1 Corinthians 15. We did not look at this in our text on Sunday, but this is a lot of verses, and I'm not going to read all of them, so I'm sorry, but you'll have to read them all, you know, afterwards. Of course, 1 Corinthians 15 is the third longest chapter in the New Testament. It goes like this. But someone will ask, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body will they come? How foolish. What you sow does not come to life until it dies. When you sow, you do not plant the body that will be, but just a seed, perhaps of wheat or something else. But God gives it a body as he has determined, and to each its kind of seeds he has given its own body. Not all flesh is the same. People have one kind of flesh, animals another, birds another, and fish another. There are also heavenly bodies, and there are earthly bodies. But the splendor of the heavenly body is one of a kind, and the splendor of the earthly body is another. The sun has one kind of splendor, the moon has another, the stars another. The stars differ from star to star in splendor. So it will be with the resurrection of the dead. The body that is sown is perishable. It is raised imperishable. It is sown in dishonor. It's raised in glory. It's sown in weakness. It's raised in power. It is sown in natural body, but it's raised in a spiritual body. If there's a natural body, there's also a spiritual body. So it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being, the last man, a life-giving spirit. The spiritual did not come first, but the natural. And after that, the spiritual. So there, man, there's so many more verses. Verse 49, and just as we have borne the image of the earthly man, so shall we bear the image of the heavenly man. So we've borne the image of the earthly man. Genesis chapter 5 talks about how we all actually have the image of Adam, and that's what he's referring to here. And then when we go to heaven, or when we accept Christ, we actually get the image of God, the image of the heavenly man. There's just so much here. There's so much. But essentially, all at the very end of the text, Paul says, where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? His point is that when we die, we inherit these heavenly bodies. We go to where, when we go to heaven, we go to true reality. The true fullness of God is what we get to see. And we actually get this beautiful gift of this earthly body. So here's the picture. If you've ever read the book The Great Divorce, I would recommend just go on Amazon, buy it right now, and read the book. It is a kind of a fictional commentary. Now, here's what I mean by that. And I think C.S. Lewis, you know, he's long gone now, but I think he would probably say the same thing. He takes into account so much of the Bible, but writes a fictional story. That's what he does. And the story opens up with the author, presumably Lewis, in hell. And, you know, he's down in this dark, dreary, gloomy area, and there's a bus stop, and he gets invited to go on this bus stop. He goes up, and the bus doesn't drive forward, it goes up. And it kind of climbs this huge cosmic mountain. And as they go up to the mountain, they realize how insignificant they are, and they get out in this beautiful place, but they're phantoms. They're just ghosts. They're not real people. And they're solid people that come down from the mountain and talk to them. And C.S. Lewis chronicles many of these conversations that the solid people and the phantoms have. And essentially, he just is showing them, like, the closer that you get to God and the more that you dispense with yourself, you know, I'll use another C.S. Lewis title, The Abolition of Man, the more that you abolish yourself and the more that you could say less of me, more of God, and ask for forgiveness and walk in God's light, then the more real you become. And I really like that. I think C.S. Lewis is right. I'm just going to tell you that right now. That might be controversial. I don't know. But if you read The Great Divorce, I think C.S. Lewis just has this beautiful vision of what it means to be in heaven with God. And that is, your body goes into this Eden-like reality of what Eden was, where you begin to glow. I mean, one of the creatures, and the phantom says that he had not looked at the solid being in the face that was talked to him because it was too bright. You know, I think the closer you get to God, the more solid you become, the more human you become, the more God intended you to be, you really are. And so I think that that's an important thing. So that's the Lewis, the Lewis thing. N.T. Wright will say this, and maybe I've already said this. We've all seen people, and this goes back to resurrected bodies. We've all seen people on their deathbed, and you know, you might say about the people on their deathbed, they're just a shadow of who they used to be. That's it. They're just a shadow. You know, they're shriveled up. They're hurting. They're dying. And you remember them in a different way because the person you're looking at on that bed is just not them. And what N.T. Wright says is that us humans are a shadow of what we're going to be in the future. So if we're, you know, on our deathbed, we're a shadow of what we used to be. Even in the best stage of your life, even if you're greatest, like I said earlier, you're in the best shape of your life, your body is just a shadow of what it was always meant to be. And I think that, yeah, to answer the question, you know, God has purchased our bodies, and we have to honor God with our bodies because our bodies will last until eternity. And I think that one of the points, the bigger points that's being made in the book of 1 Corinthians by Paul is that right now we know in part. We only know things in part, but there's going to be a day when completeness comes and what we know in part disappears and we see things the way they really are. For we only see as in like a reflection in a mirror, just a dim reflection of the way things are supposed to be right now. But one day we'll see face to face. One day we will know fully, even as we are fully known. And I think that's what Paul is trying to get across, is that these bodies, yeah, they're in decay, but in heaven it's the other way around. What's the opposite of decay? It's to get better, right? That the closer we get to God, the more undecayed we will be. I don't even know if there's a word for that. I'm sure there is. I'm just searching for it right now. But the more prosperous our bodies will be, the more filled they will be, the more light we will have. And I think that that's the whole point of the resurrected body. I think that, like I said, American philosophy kind of works against us, the realm of American realism, and that we think of things as heaven's this disembodied place. We have this disembodied body, but the scriptures talk about our real bodies and how God's going to make them new one day. So I hope that helps you. I know that's a lot, and keeps tracking with us because we'll go to the next question on the next episode. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the River's Edge Church podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that God has touched your heart through today's message. Please leave us a review and share with your friends. For more information about the ministries of REC, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. See the links in the description.